One of the most mysterious aspects of the Bigfoot legend is the fact that there have been numerous sightings of the creature over the years, but no one has ever been able to capture it or provide concrete evidence of its existence. Despite this, the legend of Bigfoot continues to endure, with many people still searching for the elusive creature. Whether you're a believer or a non-believer or somewhere in between, Bigfoot has entrapped the entire world in some version or another. The American Bigfoot, Canadian Sasquatch, Nepal's Yeti, Australian Yowie, and the Orang Pendek from Indonesia have captivated their audience, and it is clear that the hunt is on. And while many are searching for proof we all need to claim that these creatures are real, some of these searchers still believe its existence, and many more walk away disappointed that they weren't the ones to piece together the clues. For these elusive creatures have either surpassed our comprehensible ability to hide and stay off the radar, or the human imagination is more cunning than we think. Welcome back to Tragedy with a View. I am your host, Kayla, and I've got one of my very best friends, Sam, with me today, who is not the Sam you're used to listening to. Sam and I go back many, many years. Do you want to say hi? Do you want to throw in anything?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm happy to be talking about this with my best friend, Kayla. It's been a hot minute since we've had a deep dive into some of these philosophical chats.
Do you remember, I was just thinking about this not too long ago, but do you remember when I think we were visiting your grandparents and I think we were taking like scraps out in the golf cart of all things.
Oh my god.
And you were like, oh yeah, there's bears out here.
I remember.
And all I could think about was like, there's probably other things out here.
Yeah, because there was like that clover field and we just saw my grandparents always like had a scrapbook of like eggs or whatever, and like the clover field was there for deer, but because like it was just a safe space, like that was out in the middle of absolute nowhere, so mm-hmm. like there was like, who's to say that other things didn't come lurking into the night to pick up some of those like last bit of egg scraps or meatloaf or whatever.
I'm here.
It was like creepy because like, god, how old were we? Was that middle school or high school?
I think it was high school. I don't remember.
Because like, I feel like when you're young, it is your imagination just runs wild. Like more wild than I would say as an adult, because like you almost kind of grow out of that phase a little bit. Like once you get sucked into the reality of bills and.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's more like you're able to rationalize a little bit.
Yeah.
Better. Like you hear, like, for example, you know, we've got barn cats that make a ton of noise, and like every now and then I'll hear them in the middle of the night, like yowling at each other. And I'm like, mm-hmm. if I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
that we have a stupid amount of barn cats,
mm-hmm.
I would be thinking it's something else, and I would be scared. We also have coyotes, and I know that, like, coyotes don't go after people, mm-hmm. like, as, like, a general rule of thumb. Like, you're pretty safe if you see a coyote anywhere. But there's still been times where I've been, like, walking out to the barn, and there's coyotes there, and I'm like,
what if, like,
where's a shovel, where's a pitchfork, I need something to protect me.
Well, I think like it's crazy too because our minds, like our brains, have been conditioned to associate noises like howling and that like tight quick chirp, like yipping, mm-hmm. to associate with evil because of all the horror movies we've seen, the books we've read. Like, so when we hear that, like, it cues something in our brain to think, I'm in danger. And even without consciously thinking about it, your central nervous system is starting to pump that adrenaline through you. And then you think, what if they do attack me? It's almost like it's a it's a bodily subconscious response before your rational brain even starts to like process some of that stuff. I wonder if maybe that's why people think they see Bigfoot. Like, you know, cause like whenever Carl leaves me for like some business trip or whatever, and all of a sudden, like, I'm home alone, and then I start to notice all the creaks in the house, and like, that's like, so if you're alone, like, it's all circumstantial, right?
Yeah.
Because if me and you were hiking in the woods together and we were to see like a dark figure flashing between the trees, we would probably just be like, creepy, but it's probably another hiker. But if you're by yourself, you automatically go to worst case scenario. It's a demon. Yeah. It's a ghost. It's Bigfoot. Like,
what if it's not a person?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I think that's a really good point that you made about, like, you hear the sounds and, like, mm-hmm. your body's already doing things mm-hmm. to protect you. So, I mean, there's just some people out there who, like, they have that response and they instead of, like, okay, give into it, they lean into it and probably want to explore it, mm-hmm. Which is how potentially we have come up with Bigfoot. I'm not going to go out there and be like, there is no such thing as Bigfoot. But I also, like, there's not a whole lot of the world that has not been explored, and most of it is water. So unless there's a water Bigfoot.
Yeah. Which is crazy, too. Like, I don't know. This is hard. And, like, this is where I come back to the circumstantial thing, because there is, I feel like as technology progresses, I am much less likely to believe in things such as mermaids or Bigfoot, because they're really, because, like, even nowadays, there literally isn't any part of the world that we have not yet explored. Even the deepest parts of the ocean, like, that's been debunked for a while now. Like, we have mm-hmm. explored the deepest depths of the ocean. We've been to the freaking moon at this point. Like, I think if there were something lurking like Bigfoot, we would know. Now, I won't discredit that there might be some unidentified species that we continually mistake for Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. We just don't know what it is, or maybe there's some sort of animal behavior that, like, scientists just don't really fully understand yet that causes people to believe this is Bigfoot. You know, but, like, I don't know if I believe in Bigfoot. Now, if you ask me that question, we're in the woods in the dark sitting by a campfire, I might give you a different answer.
Same.
But sitting safely in my office, I think I could say I don't think I believe.
I don't know that I believe, but I think while there's, and we're going to cover a couple of stories that, like, have been proof of Bigfoot, quote unquote, for a very long time. But it's just like the things that, like, they line up too perfectly.
Yeah.
They line up too perfectly. So we'll get there. So I want to first go over the different descriptions of Bigfoot and because the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yowie, they're all, like, very similar, but, like, almost like cousin-y type descriptions. Mm-hmm. So we've got Bigfoot, which they are described to be, the males are 8 to 8.5 feet tall, or 2.4 meters. They weigh roughly 800 pounds or 360 kilograms. They're, of course, shy, nocturnal, and I saw sources that were like, they clearly consume berries. And I was like,
okay. Beef jerky.
How? How could you possibly know that when there's no proof of this thing? How could you possibly know what it eats? But okay, they probably eat berries. So then females are smaller, both in height and weight. They have broad faces, big hands, long brown fur on their arms, torsos, legs, head, and neck. And then they are also lean and muscular and always walk upright. Sasquatch is very similar because, like, the Bigfoot region is I guess, all over America, but the, like, heavy region is the Pacific Northwest. So if you go just north of that into Canada, that's where Sasquatch is, apparently. And so they're very, very similar in description, being just slightly smaller at around 7 feet tall. They also stand on two legs, and they have dark, shaggy hair covering their body, with long arms, big feet, and one of the measurements of a print that was found at one point was 19 inches long. Yeti are the same as Bigfoot and Sasquatch. However, their fur can range from white to a dark brown. So they can be gray. They can have like a lighter brown. And they are also said to have sharp canine teeth that stick out from their lips. And then we're going to move to the Yowie, which is, again, slightly smaller than these other cousins, standing anywhere from 6 to 12 feet. They have large, flat noses and ears that look like bats.
Oh, dude, that sounds like it's straight out of a horror movie. See, the first three descriptions to me, like between Bigfoot, Yeti, and Sasquatch, those almost sound like what we would have looked like as, you know, like in BC times.
Yes.
Just larger, like covered in hair, you know, they walk on 2 feet like we would as, you know, as evolution took place and progressed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I wonder, so I wonder which came first then. Did Bigfoot and Sasquatch come first? And then those later, what did you call the last one?
Yowie.
So did Yowie come later as like a development or a playoff of Bigfoot as a way to try to scare children?
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. Is that it's meant to be scarier because it's a legend, and so then there's also the O-ring Pendek, which is, in comparison to the others, it's the odd man out, and they're short, so five feet tall is like the maximum height, and then they are much more ape-like. They have very broad shoulders, very long arms. Their fur ranges from light brown to black. And they also tend to have like almost like a mane, so longer hair around their heads and then going down the spine of their back.
Interesting.
And this one also, I want to point out that it's about half the size of all of the other cousins. And this, to me, seems like probably the most likely to actually be a real creature, because it's probably a cousin of a gorilla or some monkey that either we've seen enough of that we know like what it looks like, but we can't get our hands on them yet, or they existed at one point and they've just like stories have been passed down.
Sounds believable. What are, I'm curious, are there any other like distinguishing features that like would separate them? Like, 'cause you mentioned the one had like the bat ears and fang tooth. So, but from what you have given me, like everything sounds pretty standard across like the, you know, ape kingdom, I guess.
So I'm going to show you a picture. It's a drawing of the O-ring Pendek. And
it sounds like it came from an orangutan, is like the within the name and the description, because orangutans do kind of have like that rounder head, not necessarily a mane, but like the shape of their face and skull gives that impression. Oh, that is 100% a like an orangutan with some minor adjustments.
Yeah. So then here's another drawing of, and I'm gonna save this one because it's an actual drawing.
Like they just gave it longer hair to make it look like a person.
That's all they did.
Looks like a half breed between human and ape, honestly.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. So the legend of Bigfoot, if you know, you look back to the people who lived on the land for ages before white men showed up and took over, and you listen to the indigenous stories that are out there about Bigfoot, it is often these people who are able to provide you answers that we may not be able to come up with ourselves. Mm-hmm. The tribes that live in the Harrison River Valley, which if you are in Washington and you go just north over the border into Canada, into British Columbia, there is a tribe that has lived there for over 10,000 years, and they believe in Sasquatch. And they believe that Sasquatch is a sacred symbol in their culture and is believed to be the quote-unquote caretaker of the land. Hmm. The stories of Sasquatch are passed down in the form of both verbal stories and songs, so they're not written down anywhere. And these describe Sasquatch as a shapeshifter.
Oh, interesting.
Sasquatch can turn from his large, hairy, humanoid figure into a tree, a rock, or even into another creature. Shapeshifters are said to be between two realms, the spiritual and the physical, and this is the theory as to why these creatures will never be caught, because they can step out of the physical world faster than it takes for your brain to process what you've seen.
Wow. Okay.
And
I like where this is going.
Yeah. So
this is interesting.
With this, they also believe that seeing a Sasquatch means that there's good coming your way.
I love the difference between fear-mongering, but here it's a sign of good luck, essentially. It means something totally, completely, and utterly different than from what we, you know, as kids grew up believing what Bigfoot and Sasquatch is.
Yeah.
So I wonder how did it come to have such a positive influence? Was it always a positive influence?
I think that there's, you know, generally people who live in indigenous cultures have a little bit more respect for the land. And so that's not surprising to me that they're like, there's this thing and it's fantastic and it's a good sign. And it's not surprising for me to make the leap that someone, if this is actually something that's true, I fully believe that there are multiple layers to life and worlds, and there's potentially a spirit world that's existing at the same time as we are. But if we don't understand it, of course we're going to demonize it. And of course we're going to want it to go away. There's not a whole lot of the European culture that came over with us that was like, oh yeah, we should respect this. And it's like, you know, there's been a lot of you don't know that we're doing good for you. You just need to trust us. And it's like, they've been doing good for themselves forever. You let them stay. You go do good for yourself over there. It's also turned into a way for people that have a little bit more of a sense of humor to play tricks on people. So then we're going to roll into what I call the scam, so the stories of Bigfoot began to spread after a newspaper realized that people were not going to react negatively to the stories of Bigfoot. They initially were like very cautious to spread any sort of word about this because they thought people were going to either get terrified and not want to pay attention to what they have to say, or they were going to be like, no, you guys are idiots. You don't know what you're talking about. But it turns out people love Bigfoot. And that has continued for decades. So in 1929, a magazine in British Columbia released an article with the title BC's Hairy Giants. And this is what kind of sort of began the what I'm going to call current day obsession, because I don't feel like the obsession has changed all that much. It's just kind of been passed down. So the article shared stories by the local indigenous tribes, and quite literally the world was never the same. 30 years later, in 1958, so not that long ago, there was a logging site near Bluff Creek, California, which is kind of in the northern part of the state. And they found 16-inch long footprints that were found in the mud. They looked like a person's, exactly like a person's foot, but bigger. And coincidentally, the logging camp also had some odd things happening that they couldn't quite explain. So one of those things was a 450-pound drum of diesel fuel had disappeared, along with a 700-pound tire that was just kind of laying around for some of their machines. Later, both of those items were found down a hill, and well, one was down a hill and the other one was in a ditch, and they looked like they were just placed there. Like, it didn't look like they had been rolled or like moved or drug or anything. So both of these were then blamed on Bigfoot, especially because they didn't see like any other tracks. Like, the tracks that were there were either made from the men who were working there, or they were these giant feet that they decided to call or decided to identify as Bigfoot. The crew that found the footprint and also found the 450-pound drum at a later date, they reported to their supervisor, who they called Shorty, what they were finding and what they were seeing. And Shorty told them to keep an eye out, but then took that story and reported it along with the strange tracks to the local newspaper, who ran a story on it. And this story is then what triggers the next story that we're going to talk about. I've got one more thing to say about this particular story. So this happened in 1958. In 2002, Ray Wallace, who was also known as Shorty, admitted to his children while he was on his deathbed that he had played a joke on his coworkers and put the tracks there himself. He had used wood to create the feet shape and then attached them to his feet before walking all over the logging site. So he took it pretty much to his grave. And it's interesting because the newspaper took this story and ran with it, that happened in 1958. 9 years later, in 1967, these stories that the newspaper had ran got into the hands of Roger Pattinson and Bob Gimlin, who were standing on the banks of Bluff Creek in Northern California when they spotted Bigfoot. So they both were on horseback. They had a third horse with them to help carry supplies. It was just the two of them. They didn't have anybody else with them. They didn't have anybody who was like, eh, I don't really believe. Like, you had two believers who were going out there to find Bigfoot. They had their third horse carrying supplies. Apparently, what happened was as they were coming up toward a creek, which you can see in the video. So there's a creek. They were coming towards the creek. Roger's horse was first, and all of a sudden, like, she or he spooked, reared up, tried to turn around and run away. And in the midst of Roger being like, what the heck is going on, he happened to look up and see that there was a Bigfoot on the other side of the creek crouched down. So Roger leapt from his horse. That was, as someone with horses, this takes a lot of skill. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it takes a lot of skill. His horse was spooking. His horse was trying to run away. He was trying to maintain control of it. Leapt from his horse, got into his saddle pack, which is generally attached to the back of the saddle, got his camera out, and then just let his horse go to run to the bank to turn on the camera and catch video footage of Bigfoot. So Bob, who was one horse behind him, also leapt from his horse, grabbed a hold of his rifle to kind of like back up Roger, and was just standing like kind of behind him. And they said that they knew the creature was female because they could see that she had breast. And they decided to call her Patty. Quick to get their camera rolling, they filmed Bigfoot walking with the huge overreaching stride and arms that swung with each step. This is like the iconic video that if you look up the video of Bigfoot, that's the one that you're seeing is this one that they filmed. So this video is less than a minute long, and that's it. That's all she wrote. Bigfoot exists, right? So even today, they have the original footage from the film. So even today, they cannot determine if this creature is real or fake. However, my big consideration about this was that the newspaper in 1958 ran articles on Bigfoot existing there, who we then learned later in 2002 was not there because the prints were made by supervisor who was at that location. He planted the prints there himself because he thought it was going to be a good joke, and he convinced his coworkers, who then convinced him, quote unquote, and then he took that story to the newspaper, who ran it, who then got it to Roger and Bill, who then went out to that location and filmed Bigfoot. So we then learn later in 2002 that Bigfoot never actually was concrete conclusively there because the footprints were made by a person. And so these two men were going out there looking for Bigfoot. That's what they were doing. They were going to find Bigfoot. And this video, though, would end up tearing their friendship apart because they both wanted to do something different with the video. And they never could come to an agreement on what to do. So I don't remember exactly which way it went, but one of them wanted to like release the video to the masses. And the other one was like, no, we need to keep this like kind of localized to us. So Roger, who was the one who videotaped Bigfoot, ended up passing away in 1972 due to cancer. And he was only 38 years old. And while he was declining, him and Bob kind of rekindled their friendship. And it must have been Bob who wanted to keep the video close to them, because as it started getting spread and released to other people, he started to like kind of internalize everything and kind of like shelter himself a little bit more because of all of the scrutiny that was being tossed his way. And I guess he then kind of started like coming out and being a little bit more vocal about like, no, what I saw was real. This video is real. And not only backing up himself, but also backing up Roger, who is no longer living. And he's just very adamant that what they videotaped was the real thing. It was not a trick. And I think it can go one of two ways. I think they could have gone the route that Shorty did, and they want to take this big, that they played a big joke on people to their graves, and maybe Bob is a little like me, who's like, I can't keep a secret. So there's like that concept that is kind of in the back of my mind. But then there's also the idea that if they were too vocal about like their intentions on where they were going and where they were searching and what they were looking for, and they were going to do this, that somebody decided to play a prank on them. One of them was very convinced and the other one wasn't. And I think it probably took the death of the other one for the one who wasn't wholly convinced to be like, no, I need to back up my friend on this one. So we are going to now talk a little bit about how you can look for Bigfoot today. For anybody who is like really, really big into that. When you think about it, all of these stories and sightings and encounters, and you know, there's people all over the world who wonder how in this day and age, with how much technology we have and how much the world has been explored and how much there is out there that we know, like we have concrete evidence that we know, how can there still be no proof? And one of the things that people talk about now is that, you know, we have cell phones. How can you possibly be out in nature and see Bigfoot and not be able to get your cell phone out to take a picture? And my thought on this is that if I was ever out in nature and I saw Bigfoot and I was not expecting to see Bigfoot, my first reaction is not going to be get out your phone, take a picture. And I also want to put like note in there that I'm a picture taker. So like I tend to have my phone on me when I'm hiking. Like it's either like very reachable in a pocket or it's in my hand. And that's because I like taking pictures and I like having the memories. And I know like at least in the United States, like Bigfoot gets reported everywhere. I think it's been in every single state except for Hawaii. I could be wrong, so, but I think like 49 out of 50 states have reported that they've seen Bigfoot. And a lot of these quote unquote sightings are considered unconfirmed or not credible. And that's like another thing is if Bigfoot truly exists, by reporting that you're seeing Bigfoot when you know, like, either you've been taking drugs or you've been drinking or, like, you're not 100% sure or, like, you just want to play a joke, like, all that's doing is muddling all of the effort and research and hope for proof that is going into what could potentially lead to an actual conclusive evidence of Bigfoot existing. Along those lines, since 1900, Harrison Hot Springs, which is in British Columbia, Canada, so again, just north of Washington, the state of Washington, there have been 37 notable sightings. So in 124 years, they've had 37 notable. It can mean anything. So it's basically, there's enough information for them to go on to not be able to fully discredit what was reported. So like somebody who is just playing a joke, they might have been like, yeah, I saw him over on the woods. There's a tree that has like a Y and I saw him kind of like peeking between the Y and it was on this trail. And like the people are like sitting there like, yeah, there's no trees on that trail. Like that type of a thing is like, you can just get rid of it because you already know that what is being reported is not there. So that's an extreme example because, you know, British Columbia has a ton of trees. So because they've had, and I'm going to say so many lightly because I don't know that 37 feels like a really big number to me, but because they've had so many sightings, a Sasquatch museum was opened in Harrison Hot Springs, British Columbia in 2017. And inside this museum, you will find footprint casts. So wherever they found footprints, they would make a cast of it. Copies of newspapers reporting sightings, a logbook that reports sightings as far back as 1887, And the science, however, and you kind of touched on it a little bit already, the science, however, has an explanation for all of these sightings, but none of the proof. Pareidolia is when you see something when it is not actually there. For example, a glance past a tree that is covered in long, like, wisps of moss. Mm-hmm. You might do a double take because you see that and you think, oh, that's a figure with hair. But when you turn back, what you saw is not there. So then, you know,
yeah. Your brain's probably trying to quickly fill in the gaps as like a protective mechanism.
You're filling in the gaps with things that you know.
Yes.
And what people know is other people.
Yep. Absolutely. So that makes sense.
So, and here's where I'm like really entertained. There's a lot of ideas and theories on how to find Bigfoot. And Lauren Coleman, who is a cryptozoologist, which is, he studies undiscovered creatures like Bigfoot. Okay. So he has 50 years of experience. And in his theory is that someday a group of women are going to go out into the forest in the Pacific Northwest and just chill out there for 6 months. And that's going to be when they discover Bigfoot. And it's entertaining to me because
you would totally do that.
it's like the camping
out in the woods for 6 months part.
Listen, if anybody is going to be able to go out and camp in the same area of the woods for 6 months, it's women. Of course. Thank you for recognizing that.
The shit we put up with.
But like, the theory is not because women are going to be able to like stick it out. It's because he believes that there's something about the human male scent that drives Bigfoot away.
Interesting.
However, the majority of sightings and the majority of reports come from men.
That is also interesting.
So it's just like,
what I believe about his theory, or what I would have to agree with, is I think the camping out for 6 months part, because I think after camping out for 6 months in the woods, anybody, male or female, I think you would, I don't want to say lose your mind, because like, I'm sure a lot of people that just sounds like vacation to them.
Yeah.
But you start to kind of lose touch with, I think, not necessarily reality, but maybe society for sure a little bit. Maybe like the realities with that. And I think you start to like become like, not, it sounds kind of hippy dippy of me to say like, oh, you become one with nature, but like, that's absolutely true. To be able to do that, you have to, like, for 6 months. So you start to like, and you start to see and hear things that you wouldn't have the opportunity to otherwise. And I think it would open up your mind to a lot of different kinds of possibilities. So I think eventually after 6 months, you'd be like, maybe that was Bigfoot. It could totally,
You
see a lot of things that you just can't explain, and you're detached from society, or possibly the access of internet to be able to just Google every whimsical thing that you see. And I don't know, there's kind of like a peace to not doing that when you're camping too. Like, you know, when you go out camping, you do it most of the time intentionally to leave the internet behind and to just be in it. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's the part of his theory that I do believe. Like,
that it makes sense.
It makes sense.
And the other
part, I believe it has to be women essentially. Because you bring up a good point with like most of the sightings were from men.
And the other thing that like kind of like triggered in the back of my mind there was that women have a lot of success with primates. So if Bigfoot, like humans, runs along the primate line, there's like interacting.
What do you mean by women have success with primates? You mean like
Jane Goodall has an enormous amount of research.
Like the capabilities to interact in a peaceful manner. And
yes, they're more nurturing. maybe he is onto something with the scent of males, is that like it is a little bit of a threatening scent. Mm-hmm. But that also is in the back of my mind, that like maybe it is just going to take a woman to figure it out and just hasn't gotten there yet. So he also believes that the O-ring Pendek will be the first to be discovered somewhere in remote Southeast Asia. And as much as I would love to be like, oh, this guy is crazy because he's alone in this thought, mm-hmm. the community of Bigfoot researchers shares this idea that women will be who discovers Bigfoot.
I mean, so, I like it. But of course, I'm biased.
Of course. So the current president of the American Bigfoot Society, her name is Melissa Hovey Larson. She agrees because she finds that women have a more nurturing energy and it seems to put other animals at ease. And this is why she says that women have so much success in studying animals because of that energy that we provide. Of course, though, that's also assuming that Bigfoot is a primate.
You're right.
Because we don't know.
Even if he's like not a primate, but like I don't even know if it's necessarily like just the general energy that we put off. I think it has to do with like evolution or evolution in the sense that, okay, back in, you know, BC or, you know, back before we became a, what we now consider a civilized society, you know, we are just generally, I mean, I wish we weren't, but it's just the truth of the fact we are generally smaller. That's just what it is. So I think to adapt to that, to allow us to survive, we have to be way more perceptive of other people's emotions. And I think that translates, you know, is this person that is twice my size going to hurt me? What is their body language? Like, what are they telling me with their eyes? And I think that translates also to the animal kingdom. And maybe that's why women have a greater capacity to interact with another species, is because,
yeah.
So I don't know if it like, so maybe like to put a definition to that energy, maybe it's just being able to recognize, you know, threatening or not threatening behavior. I'm like, okay, well, I don't need to put on a defense to this, or, you know, mm-hmm. being able to appropriately react to the behavior that we're recognizing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not to say that men like can't definitely. Like clearly there are men who can.
Yeah.
There's clearly men who are
just more of an incentive for us to do it, because by nature, we just are, like, naturally smaller. As much as I hate to admit this, you know, it's, you know, it's terrifying. You know, I used to be in law enforcement, and, you know, as much as I want to have that cocky, macho ego, like, I can take this guy, the truth of the matter is, I probably couldn't without my taser.
There's as much as I want to be like, oh no, women are on equal ground, like,
mm-hmm. and maybe we are, just in another sense, like, and maybe that's why our capacity to gauge emotion is greater. Maybe it's to balance out.
Yeah.
That,
well,
you know.
Yeah. So actually I want to amend, like, I think men and women, male and female, are on equal ground. But as with everything else, women have strengths, men have strengths. Mm-hmm. And, like, of course, that doesn't necessarily have to be, like, specifically male and specifically female. It can be person to person.
Yes.
But those mm-hmm. strengths are what helps us turn into the species and the community that we have. And there's so much, this is going way off topic, but there's so much fight that, like, no, women can do everything that men can do, and men can do everything that women can do. And it's also like, but actually,
mm-hmm.
if we would just focus on what our personal strengths are, we would be doing so much better.
I also don't even know if we have to put gender roles to that, because even if you look at it as like, well, you know what? men can't do everything that men can do, and women can't do everything. Like, it's literally on a person-to-person basis, and I really like your standpoint of just playing to your strengths, because one person's strengths is here and that's another person's weakness. I think the main point of this whole like gender equality thing is to just being able to acknowledge, well, that doesn't make them lesser, you know?
Yes.
You know, they're just better at different things. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Way off topic.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. So for anybody wanting to search for Bigfoot, you can go into British Columbia where the mountains meet the ocean and the terrain becomes way too technical to easily traverse, and attend tours to find Bigfoot, ranging from 1.5 hours and a more of an amusement park style adventure with zip lines, all the way up to 11-day backpacking excursions into the wild. The cost range from a few hundred dollars to a few thousand. But there's something for everyone in there. Additionally, Harrison River...
Is that a good way to find them or not a good way to find them?
That's a good way to explore your options for finding them.
Okay. Okay. That's what I was thinking. Because I'm like, man, I don't know if you're going to... I'm just very skeptical if you're going to find them and see them, it's going to be on a tour. Like,
it's going to be on a zip line for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be something totally freaking random that you're just not prepared for.
Yeah. So... Additionally, Harrison River Valley also has a Sasquatch trail complete with statues for you to take pictures with. And in the month of June, you can attend a festival called Sasquatch Days, which has been held every year since 1938.
Oh, see, that just sounds like fun. You know,
it is. It does sound like fun. I would go.
I would go too. Like, I don't know. It's just something different, unique. Learn something, meet. You know, meet
new people.
Kinds of people and
yeah. On
who knows, you might meet somebody there that's like, I don't like that they just know like this awesome hidden secluded place. You're like, man, I've been camping because like that. I feel like the networking, like that's how you find those secret places where maybe if he's real, you're gonna run into him.
Like. Yeah, for sure. So on the more serious side of searching. There is the Alberta Sasquatch organization who is compiling a list of small groups of people who investigate the locations of Bigfoot sightings. And they've been doing this in the Alberta area for about 15 years. And the people in this organization include folklorists, biographers, and of course, Bigfoot enthusiasts. And they receive a handful of reports every year, mostly in the spring and fall seasons. Then in the mid-90s, a man by the name of Matt Moneymaker founded the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. And he has received, this organization, I guess I should say, has received 75,000 reports of sightings since he started it in the mid-90s. And they admit, though, that only a few thousand of these 75,000 reports are credible. So the majority of them, yeah. So the majority of them are like, eh, get out of here.
Mm. Still seems like a decent number.
That is a decent number.
Yeah.
It's.
One thing I just thought of. Did you mention the abominable? Oh my gosh, I always butcher this.
Abominable snowman. Abdominal.
Abnominal. Snowman. How the heck do you actually say it? Abominable. God damn it. I legitimately can't say it. I think it's because I can't even picture how the word is spelled, so my lips are just, like, piecing things together.
Okay, we're not completely off. It's actually also known as the Yeti.
Okay.
But it's abominable.
Abominable.
There's no D in it.
Oh, abominable?
Abominable.
Say it again.
A bomb in able.
Abominable.
Abominable.
Okay.
Not abdominal.
Okay, so he's also known as the Yeti.
Yes.
Okay, I was just thinking back because I'm like, which one is exclusively white colored in fur?
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
So before we kind of like wrap up here, clearly there's going to be no answer in this episode about whether Bigfoot exists or not. But author and speaker on Sasquatch, Thomas Steinberg, admits, and this is a quote, "I accept the possibility that the Sasquatch may turn out to be nothing more than mythology and folklore, and that alone makes it worth looking into. Sasquatch, if it exists, is a symbol that there is still wilderness out there and that we haven't tamed everything yet." And I really like that because, of course, we haven't tamed everything.
Yeah. It almost leaves some hope left out there. And like the one other thing that like I was thinking about circling back to was that the indigenous people that you were discussing earlier, because it has like a spiritual side to it, like it's one of those things that you just have to have faith in. Spiritual side to it, then you are literally never going to know, because if it really does have that capacity to transform into rocks or trees, like there will never be proof.
But no,
just because there's not proof doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Right.
It's just more in a spiritual sense, you know?
Yeah. You have to believe for yourself.
Yes.
And also understand and accept that you may never be able to provide that same belief to someone else.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this with me.
Thank you for listening. Please take a moment to rate and subscribe from wherever you listen to Tragedy with a View. To get access to ad-free episodes, bonus content, and more, please join us on our Patreon. The link will be in the show notes. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and to share a story of your own, send us a campfire confessional email at tragedywithaview@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.